then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a man big chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's April the 12th, 2012. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, a few quick housekeeping matters first. Axis Sally did a commentary today on some of the input we've received about the show itself for the past couple of weeks. In fact, I've already recorded her segment for this week's show, and so I'll be running that clip this week. But if I can anticipate her blast on next week's show a little, I'd like to explain a few things. I think, in fact, I've actually explained them already, but that's okay. Spaced repetition is part of the job. You repeat something often enough, eventually it sinks in. The criticism has been leveled that over the past 6 months or so, Radio Free Northwest has lost focus because of all the panel discussions from our gang of five or six commentators here, and that there should be a lot less babbling about mainstream media stories and a lot more Harold Covington ranting and raving and cursing at people and telling you to pull your socks up. Not that it actually does any good when I do that, it's just that's what some people apparently like to hear. One thing I ran into a long time ago, and it still puzzles me, is that some people apparently want to sit and listen to me read a speech. I think this is some kind of holdover from the John Birch Society days, when the chapter meeting would gather together in somebody's suburban living room or rec room, and after the tea and cookies, whoever the commissar from Belmont was would set up the big ghetto blaster and put in a cassette tape with Robert Welch's latest two-hour speech on it. I remember even back in the NSPA days, that's what a lot of people wanted from me in my capacity as party leader. They didn't like informal cassette letters. They didn't like practical discussion of practical points on how to organize and convert people and get active. They wanted me to actually sit in front of the microphone and read a speech. Now, this must satisfy something deep in the right-wing's psyche. I've just never been able to figure out what. It's also, of course, very safe. So long as Fearless Leader is sitting there droning on and on into a microphone, talking about ideology and the Jewish world conspiracy and the Bilderbergers and whatnot, he's not agitating for you to do things that might cause you risk and inconvenience, like packing up your shit and moving to the Northwest, for example. Now, to some degree, I have to do that now, sit here and read speeches, that is, because there are things that I need to say to all of you. But what you have to understand is that one of the primary claims or accusations of the goat dancers is that, quote-unquote, Harold is all alone. He's a minority of one. He's just sitting there all on his lonesome playing with his computer. Nobody supports him. He's all internet, not doing anything in the real world. The whole movement rejects him. Everybody in the movement hates Harold, etc., etc. Now, some of you will know the drill. Ironically, this accusation seems to come most from people who use false names themselves on the internet and who reveal no personal information at all as to their identity or their whereabouts. People whom nobody knows. People whom nobody has ever seen. Or else there are a few aging relics from the 1990s who basically are doing the same thing they accuse me of doing. The irony of that seems to escape most people. In point of fact, I could not have survived for as long as I have done and accomplished even what little I've accomplished without the help and support of hundreds of white nationalists. Hell, thousands of them down through the years. But these morons never let facts get in the way of a good smear. And so you'll find this horse hockey all over the internet about how, quote-unquote, everybody hates Harold, and Harold has no support, and Harold is all alone, blah, 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 blah. So why should I worry about what is said on the internet by a group of completely unknown idiots? Unfortunately, there is a problem there. Now, let's say that you're a young white man or woman, or maybe a not-so-young white man or woman, and one day something happens, and you finally see the light, racially speaking. You snap, or some little light bulb comes on over your head. Some incident pushes you over the edge. It's the straw that broke the camel's back, however you want to put it. And all of a sudden, you recognize that race is real, and that you and your family and your children are under threat from this horrible society, and you want to do something about it. So, where is the first place you look for information and help? The goddamned internet is where. And what do you find there? Goat dancing and goo goo and
space madness.
I won't get into this any further, but suffice it to say that when people tune in to Radio Free Northwest every week, for a variety of reasons, they need to hear someone else's voice besides mine. And they need to hear something besides me sitting and reading a speech on some obscure and non-threatening ideological point that was adequately explained back in the 1930s. Now, my job now is to make sure that you don't get off the hook like whole generations of right-wingers and white nationalists have done. Now, another quick little comment along the line of, peekaboo, I see you. For the past several months, I've been getting a lot of emails through the blog comment section from people who claim to be hot to trot for the 14 words in the Northwest Front. Oh, yeah, they're afire with enthusiasm. And they tell me all about how they're going to do this for the Republic, and they're going to do that, and they're going to do the other thing. But then they add at the end of their email, oh, by the way, Harold, I have just this teeny-weeny little bit of Indian or Asian or Jewish blood. Will I be welcome in the Northwest Republic? Now, they always use that last phrase at the end of the comment, which is one way you can tell it's some kind of seminar. Whoever these idiots are, they're working off the same template, and they either think we're too stupid to notice or else they're just plain lazy. This has happened about a dozen times now in the past 2 or 3 months. I don't know who's doing it. It could be Jews, or it could be Occupy Public Toilets, or it could be some fool from the media, or whoever. Or it could just be some of these 90s retreads from the pseudo-intellectual faggot blogs. But whoever it is, peekaboo, I see you. You guys really ought to change your script.
Hi guys, this is Axis Sally, and for all the problems I've had, at least I can say I'm not a damn transgender. I received an article about one such individual who filed a complaint against a university who wouldn't let her serve as a resident advisor in an all-male residence hall. This creature was born a female, but she says she identifies as a male. Now, since when can you just decide you're going to be something other than what it says on your birth certificate? Now that I know that's an option, I'm just going to start identifying myself as whatever the hell I want to be, regardless of any documentation that does not support this. It says on my birth certificate I was 7 pounds 8 ounces. Let's make that an even 14 pounds. That's how much I weighed at birth. That may not be what the paperwork says, but this is just how I identify, and if you don't support my self-concept, you're violating my human rights. My driver's license says I'm 5'1". We're going to call it 5'3" from now on, just because. Stop trying to erase my identity. I may only have a 4-year college education, but I identify more as someone with a master's degree in space caterpillars who also manages a lava lamp factory. That's what I'm going to start putting on job applications, and if someone points out that doesn't make any sense, I can tell them to stop screwing with my sense of who I really am as a person. Transgender weirdos make homosexuals look like semi-regular people, if that's even possible. And this one, Caden Cass at Miami University of Ohio, is claiming that she is a male-identified person, that her identity is erased when she's in an all-female environment, and that her mental health is suffering as a result of not being able to be with her peers. That's funny. I'm a female-identified person, and when I'm in a largely male environment, I still somehow identify as a female. Obviously, this person's mental health is suffering if she loses her identity when she's not around the kind of people she thinks she is. And this university offers housing especially for transgendered students, so if she wants to be with her peers, she can move into the special freak house. But she doesn't want to be with her peers. She wants to be with normal men and create an awkward situation and force everyone to accept her decision to fight against basic biology. During both my pregnancies, I decided not to find out the sex of the unborn child, and all anyone wanted to know was, "What are you having?" I said I didn't know, and they asked how they were supposed to buy the baby anything, and I ended up with a lot of those light green clothes that don't look good on anyone. And of course, after the children were born, what do you think the response would have been if someone asked, "What did you have?" and I responded with, "Oh, a blonde one, or a big giant one." That's not what they want to know. They want to know, is it a boy or a girl? That's supposed to be the one thing you cannot change, the thing that instantly defines who you are for the rest of your life, and that is why it's the first, and sometimes the only, thing someone wants to know about a child. When meeting someone for the first time and asking about their families, once you find out that they have kids, you might ask first how many, but your next question is probably, are they boys or girls? I've mentioned that I grew up in a super liberal university town in Oregon. At one downtown apartment complex where I lived, my neighbors across the way were lesbians, and one of them was slowly turning herself into a man. I lived there for about a year, and it was kind of interesting to see the slow transition from a hideously ugly woman to a weird, effeminate man. These people were freaks. In their little apartment, they had 5 dogs and 4 cats. 2 of the dogs were very large and were not suitable pets for an apartment. The animals were all neglected, and the man-woman was drunk by 9 every morning. So obviously, trying to fit into her own weird perception of self-identification wasn't helping her at all. I think most weirdos and freaks just aren't very happy people. What's hilarious is the lesbians broke up, probably because the female-looking one didn't want to be with a man because she was a lesbian. So she took all the animals, and then it was just the drunk man-woman. I'm also glad that, with all the crap we deal with in the movement, this is generally not one of the issues. I don't have to sit here and remind you all that we don't want to build our Northwest homeland with people who don't know what the hell gender they are and sit at home drinking with their space caterpillars and complaining that everyone else is hindering their mental health. This is Axis Sally, fighting for my identity every day.
I think we'll take our first music break a little early this week. This is a medieval music group called Portcullis. Their music is authentic enough. It's kind of Renaissance fairy, airy fairy, light, lilac, whatever you want to call it. You listen to their music and you conjure up visions of little fairies dancing around sugar plums or whatever, but it's not bad. This is called Midsummer. Sally and I are just sitting here going over the day's news, which of course confirms the fact that we live in a completely insane society. We came across an article from KMGH-TV in Denver. A police officer is complaining that his girlfriend attacked him with a Justin Bieber doll.
How old is his girlfriend?
Who is Justin Bieber anyway? I thought he was an actor or something. I don't keep up with this crap.
He's some kind of boy child singer who looks like a girl and sings faggy pop songs like they all do.
Okay, so he's a musical emo.
Yes.
Okay. And it,
well, he doesn't look like an emo. He looks like he's about 10 years old. Girls just love him.
Okay. Is he a vampire?
No, definitely not. He'd be the worst one ever.
Okay,
he's
right.
Kind of skinny and anorexic looking, like he has AIDS or something.
Well, Robert Pattinson looked like that. He's the actor that does the vampire on the Twilight series. Okay. Justin Bieber can be painful. No, not his music. Although opinions may vary on that account, according to KMGH-TV in Denver, police officer Michael Nunes Jr. was arrested for beating his girlfriend and claimed in his defense that she threw a Justin Bieber doll at him. Is that Bieber or Biber?
Bieber.
Bieber, okay, right. Leave it to Bieber, I guess, you know. Threw a Justin Bieber doll at him, leaving a bruise on his foot. According to the police affidavit, Nunes called the figure a Barbie doll. But his colleagues on the force helpfully noted in their report that the doll he pointed out was actually a Justin Bieber doll. Michael Nunes stated that his girlfriend had thrown a Barbie doll at him, which bruised his foot and said that it hurt. Nunes pointed out a Justin Bieber doll, which was the item used to injure him, and he then proceeded to beat the crap out of his girlfriend. Okay. Do you realize that if you are in Denver and you get in trouble and you call the cops, you may find responding to your call an armed Mexican who beat up a woman who attacked him with a doll?
So look for a guy who says his foot hurts. That's him.
What would this guy do if you actually try to take a swing at him or something?
Okay, so this guy's a Mexican. You know, Mexicans, they go for really, really young girls. That's why I'm wondering, okay, he's dating someone who still plays with dolls.
Well, obviously, when he tried to, you know, rape her or whatever, she fought back with the doll. It's just, anyway, see, the rest of the story is pretty sad. Nunes' girlfriend says that in the January 14th incident, he pulled her hair out, punched her, kicked in a locked bathroom door to get to her, and hit her with part of the door. Technology is involved, too, with both parties using the audio and video on their phones to try and record the incidents. So they're both attacking each other, fighting, and holding up their video
cameras.
They're
probably posting on Facebook, too.
On YouTube. No, YouTube. And Nunes' girlfriend reportedly messaging a friend from her iPad while locked in the bathroom, hiding from him. And the argument reportedly all started when, according to KMGH, Nunes gave her an ultimatum to change her Facebook page status to say that she was in a relationship with him.
Okay, so she's hiding in the bathroom with her iPad and her Justin Bieber doll.
Okay, he kicks in the door and beats crap out of her because she won't change her Facebook page. People, we are not making this up.
Oh, the Bieber doll, which was one of two dolls thrown at Nunes. The identity of the other doll was not released. Was broken in the attack. So, okay, she had two dolls, and for some reason, we don't know what the other one was. Probably Harry Potter or one of those vampires.
Raggedy Ann or something. what are the kind of dolls are there? A Smurf.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I said, I swear to God, we are not making this crap up. Seriously, think about it. Now, you get in trouble in Denver, or you get pulled over at a traffic stop in the middle of the night. This is who you're going to find in a police uniform wearing a legal gun with the power to shoot you.
Oh, well, it says here he's been assigned to desk duty. So, I guess that's a step in the right direction.
Might kick in the desk and...
Well, no, his foot's all bruised up.
If I was another cop in that shop, I'd start hiding trolls and Bieber dolls and Barbie dolls in the desk all the time and... okay. All right. Enough of that idiotic story. Now let's look for another idiotic story here. Speaking of emos or Justin Bieber, we have another story here stating that Iraqi teenagers have been stoned to death for emo haircuts. At least 90 Iraqi teenagers with emo appearances have been stoned to death by religious extremists in Baghdad in the past month after an inflammatory Interior Ministry statement dubbed it devil worshipping. Iraq's moral police released a chilling statement on the Interior Ministry's website condemning the emo phenomenon among Iraqi youth, disturbingly declaring its intent to eliminate the trend. I guess they are. Stoning people to death will kind of eliminate a trend. Now, this is actually an interesting story. Number one, we just finished about, 8 years, 9 years of occupying this country with the object of turning them into us, right? When we left, there was going to be a Starbucks on every corner, and there was going to be Burger Kings all up and down the street, and they're going to vote and have two nice little parties in their parliament and pump all the oil we wanted and go to the mall on Saturdays or whatever, and just generally, we were going to transform this 2,000-year-old culture. Actually, more than that, you know, Iraq is actually the cradle of civilization. It contains the ruins of Babylon, of Sumeria, of Nineveh. But we were going to transform all this into 21st century American culture where instead of Allah, they worship Ronald McDonald. We were going to do all this at gunpoint. So now we've left and they're stoning kids to death for wearing American emo haircuts. I would say we didn't do a very good job, did we, Jug Ears?
Well, you know, I guess really I'm not supposed to say that this is good, but somebody had to step up and do something about this. I don't care if they're devil worshippers. I think they should be stoned to death just for looking so god-awfully stupid. Why can't we start doing that to people here, emos and wiggers?
In a way, that's kind of the idea of my novels. One of the more perceptive critics was attacking my books, and he said, Covington, you're crazy. You want for Americans to do what we're seeing on the streets of Baghdad today. And I said, yeah, got it in one, buddy. Really, it is interesting because it just shows the difference between Iraqis, in other words, all these people that we look down on as sand niggers and camel jockeys and we abuse and we laugh at when our bombers drop napalm on their kids from 30,000 feet and call them names and all this sort of stuff. Well, I would say that their culture is a lot more squared away and that their society is a lot more squared away than ours because basically they won't put up with the kind of crap that we put up with in this country and that has utterly destroyed our civilization. I don't blame the Arabs and the Muslims for resisting the hell out of the Americans. I don't blame them for not wanting to be transformed into us. And when things like emos and rock and roll and all this other Western horse manure, this poison, this cultural toxic waste that comes from the Jews starts seeping into their society, these people are smart enough to recognize it for what it is, the thin edge of the wedge, and they will not tolerate it, which, as far as I'm concerned, puts them head and shoulders above us.
Yes, anything you can think of that's wrong with America, it is allowed to exist because we let it happen. We invited it in, and we don't do anything about it.
Maybe next time we're tempted to call these people sand niggers and camel jockeys and look down on them, maybe we ought to remember that, number one, these people basically ran us out of Iraq after 9 years. I don't see any way in which that mess can possibly be called a victory. They're about to run us out of Afghanistan, and if we stick our hand into that Iranian hornet's nest, we're going to draw back a nub. Maybe, even though these people do have, shall we say, dusky skins, maybe we need to kind of start differentiating a little bit between them and the non-whites who are actually actively seeking to destroy us, like the Jews, the niggers, the Asians, the mestizos. I know that our European brothers take a different view of this because in their countries, Muslims are a major problem as far as immigration goes. I get that. I don't expect any Europeans to agree with me, but over here, it's not so much the Muslims. It's the Mexicans, it's the niggers, it's the Jews, and I think maybe we need to start at least taking a little bit of the attitude that the enemy of my enemy is, well, not necessarily my friend. It's somebody we at least need to be on speaking terms with.
I was just going to say, who said that? Who said the enemy of the enemy is my friend?
I did, just now.
I mean, no, but I was going to say, who was it who's, I heard this from somebody.
I have no idea.
Did that come from you the whole time?
No, that's, I don't know, it's just one of those old sayings you hear around. Okay, here we go. Speaking of enemies, this is from the British Daily Mail, and I think it's just fascinating. You can see these stories, even on the web, you can see them in British newspapers especially, but other foreign newspapers, you never see these things in American newspapers. In many cases, we know more about our own country from foreign newspapers that we can read on the internet than we do from our own media, our own CNN and talk shows and whatnot. Anyway, this is from Israel. Ultra-Orthodox Jewish demonstrators caused outrage today by dressing children as Holocaust victims to protest against what they see as persecution of devout Jews seeking gender separation in Israel. A boy wearing a cloth cap and the side curls of an Orthodox Jew was the centerpiece of the Jerusalem pro- blah, 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 blah. God, that's an ugly child. Look at that. God, it looks like a troll. I think that kid's got Down syndrome or something, but it's just ugly.
They ought to gas that one.
Oh, God. Yeah, you can't see this, but okay, it's a demonstration of a bunch of Orthodox Jews in Jerusalem. And, you know, Jews are ugly to begin with, but you look at these guys, they're wearing these fur hats, which are not suitable for that climate. It's the same dress that they were wearing in the ghettos of Poland and Russia and Lithuania. And so it's just not suitable for a desert climate, but they wear it anyway. They're demanding gender separation and dressing their kids up, including what looks like, I guess that's a little girl. But anyway, they're wearing old yellow stars with Yud on them. And so everyone's yelling and screaming. In Israel, this is, again, something very interesting. Israel was originally founded not just by Jews, but by communists. The first institutions they created in Palestine were the kibbutzes, which are like communal farms. And the stated vision of the Israeli Constitution of 1948 was to build not only a Jewish homeland, but a socialist homeland. And so they had a few of the rabbinical type Jews, and they gave them special privileges, like their yeshiva boys don't have to serve in the army. But that was back in the 40s and 50s when there were only about 40 or 50 of them in the whole country. And what's happened is down through the years, these Orthodox Jews have battened on to the government, getting welfare and child allowance and all kinds of benefits, not having to serve in the army. And they're called Haredim in Hebrew. And these Orthodox families are having 12, 13, 14 kids per family, while the secular Jews are paying all the taxes, they're serving in the army, they're keeping the private sector going. The Jewish women in Tel Aviv and various coastal cities have their careers and they're doing their feminist thing, and so they're either working at their jobs or sitting on the beach polishing their nails or something like that, and they're having one, two kids max. And now, in 2012, a point has been reached when there are almost more Orthodox Jews living off the state parasitically than there are actual normal secular Jews who are running things and paying the taxes and keeping things going. And frankly, the Israeli state is about to collapse. Anyway, what this is all about is that the Orthodox Jews are demanding that men and women be separated in public transportation, in the workplace, in other communal areas, whatever. They are establishing in Israel a theocracy, a religious state, very similar in its own way to what the Persians have in Iran, except in Iran it's a Muslim fundamentalist state, and in Israel it's becoming a Jewish fundamentalist state. And the big demand here is that men and women be completely segregated.
And this has absolutely nothing to do with the alleged Holocaust, but whenever the Jews don't get what they want, I guess they just dress up like Holocaust victims and start calling everyone Nazis?
Oh, yeah, that's a very popular thing in Israel. As a matter of fact, they keep threatening to pass a law in Israel forbidding any Israeli from calling another a Nazi or portraying another Israeli in Nazi uniform, because right before that guy Rabin got plugged, the rightists that were demonstrating against him were holding up pictures of Rabin dressed in an SS uniform, which is ridiculous. But how do you know it isn't the Bureau calling?
Well, I'll tell them that they'll just have to call back. I'm gathering information now.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. And I forgot what I was babbling about now.
Jews and crap.
I'm always babbling about Jews and crap. Okay. Anyway, it's nice to know that Israel is not escaping the crap that they've dished out for others. Their society's collapsing as well.
So it says this ugly little Jew boy is raising his handcuffed hands in protest of this, you know, the Jews not getting what they wanted. I bet he's holding his hands up protesting the damn handcuffs. He doesn't know what's going on.
Is that a boy?
I thought it was just a boy.
I thought it was just an ugly girl, but it looks like a troll or a mongoloid idiot of some kind. Oh, for God's sake. You guys can't see this. Right underneath the pictures of the Orthodox Jews in Jerusalem claiming to be Holocaust survivors, they've got that famous picture from allegedly the ghetto where the little boy's got his hands up and is being, you know, harassed by the evil Nazi stormtroopers or whatever. I won't describe it, but oh, there's more Jews. Oh, they're pretending to be Holocaust survivors and they're in a cage now.
Where they should be.
You know, Jews, for all they claim to hate the Holocaust and, oh, hey, what was done to our people, oh, they are fascinated by it. It's well known in Hollywood that any time there is a Nazi role going in a movie, Jews just can't wait. Jewish actors are lining up to play the role. Mel Brooks, that idiot Jew director, was especially bad about that. Any excuse he could to dress up in a Nazi uniform. Woody Allen did it in Zelig. the list of Jewish actors from Kirk Douglas to Michael York to just about everybody who just go out of their way. They'll even take a cut in pay if they can just play a Nazi in a movie and wear a Nazi uniform. It's just like they get off on it. A few years ago, this Jew doctor, this was in Devonshire, eventually I think the British government closed him down, but he actually built his little concentration camp out on Dartmoor, some fairly remote area of England, and he used it as a diet camp, and he used what was called the Buchenwald diet. I'm not making this up. For about £500 a week or some ridiculous fee, you would be loaded up into, I don't know if it was a cattle car on the train, but you loaded up into a truck, you would be taken to this concentration camp, you would be given these striped pajamas and a little yellow star to put on your chest, and you would be kept in this camp for 3-4 weeks at a time on the Buchenwald diet, which is like 600 calories a day or something like that, a thin gruel or supposedly what they served at Buchenwald. And the idea was to make you lose weight. And I guess, yeah, I mean, if you eat nothing but 600 calories a day, yeah, you'll lose weight all right. But there were people lining up all over Europe to go to this little faux concentration camp, almost all of them Jews.
People want to pay money to be locked in a cage and not fed?
I know it sounds insane, and I know sometimes you guys probably think I make these things up. I don't. I don't have to. Okay, who's this? A Jewish family in Amsterdam. Oh, Amsterdam. Oh, it's got to be the Franks. Oy, poor Anne Frank. Oh. This is ridiculous. Seems to me that we haven't had a good old-fashioned bloody murder ballad in a while. This is Walter Forbes.
My true love did meet.
Judge orders illegal high school valedictorian to leave U.S.
I'll bet.
Oh, the liberals are going to, this is going to be a sob story here.
I got to see that.
Well, Miami. A judge has ordered a top student at North Miami Senior High School to leave the country later this month. The student has lived here since she was four. Now her classmates say they don't plan on letting her live. Oh, God, this is going to be a sob story. Okay, I'm looking at the picture of this little brown fat thing. Just what we need, another... Okay, well, I'll see what is she. Oh, she was Colombian, yeah, a few years ago.
Wait. Hold it.
What?
She has a 6.7 GPA? How the fuck? What'd they do?
It only goes up to 5, doesn't it?
No, it goes up to 4.
Oh, it goes up to 4.
Straight A's are a 4.
Okay. All right. Well, that's quite a...
Obviously, she must have flunked math. Either that or the reporter did.
Well, I would say definitely this little fat Colombian girl is definitely an intellectual giant. She has achieved
No American student has been able to achieve in the last 200
almost,
years.
Well, she must have got double A's on all her... for God's sake. Okay, mobile euthanasia units launched in the Netherlands. Well, I'd be okay, but the thing is, they're just going to be killing old white people. Now, if they could kill some of those Moluccans and Muslims, new scheme called Life End will respond to sick people whose own doctors have refused to help them and end their lives at home. So, in other words, in Holland, where euthanasia is now legal, if your doctor won't give you the hot shot and kill you, you can just pick up the phone and call the government, and they'll send a whole van of people to kill you. I mean, this is...
Well, they don't need to do that. They could just go down to the Dalmarok and buy all the heroin they want legally and just do it themselves.
I've never gotten this thing about, okay, if you want to kill yourself, I don't necessarily agree with that. As I've said before on this program, there are three things in life that I've never been even remotely tempted to try. That's drugs, suicide, and homosexuality. I wouldn't commit suicide. I'd be afraid I'd miss something, but or at least I say now. Now, okay, maybe if I was in agonizing pain or something like that, but put it this way, I wouldn't commit suicide. I would arrange to take some people with me, probably, but this looks like something out of Monty Python here. It's from The Guardian in the UK, and apparently that's the case in Holland right now. If your own doctor won't shoot you up with poison and kill you, you can call the government and they'll send, I suppose it'd be kind of like a reverse EMT thing. Instead of an ambulance coming to take you to the hospital, a hearse comes to kill you and take you away to the morgue. I mean, it's... Just...
No, it'll be a Dutch Sonder commando.
Okay. The launch of the so-called Levensende or Life End house call units, whose services are being offered to Dutch citizens free of charge. Oh, sorry, old man, we can't kill you. Your card was declined.
I'm sure it's going to get that bad, trust me. Jesus Christ.
Well, in Iran, when they execute somebody by firing squad, they send the family a bill for the bullets. Okay. Launch of the so-called Life End house call units, whose services are being offered to Dutch citizens free of charge, coincides with the opening of a clinic of the same name in The Hague. That's the center of international law, right?
Yeah.
Okay, the center of the world court, and just down the street, they've got this facility to kill people. That's bizarre. Which will take patients with incurable illnesses as well as others who do not want to die at home. All this leftist crap that goes on in Europe and Britain and places like that is going to come here eventually. A few years ago, I was talking about all these closed-circuit TV cameras they've got on the corners in every British city, and now we've got them here in this country. I understand we're starting to get some of them in New York and Chicago and places like that that are interactive. In other words, somebody is watching you and yelling at you if you're doing something they don't like and or so forth. And it's interesting, when you have this type of system in a surveillance state, it creates this whole class of people who have nothing to do all day except watch their fellow citizens on a TV screen.
Well, these people want to get a law to allow the government to bump people off, and now they want the law to somehow make it illegal for the sea level to rise.
Okay, right.
I wonder how they're going to do that. It was a King Canuck that...
King Canute.
Oh, he wasn't a Canadian.
He didn't have... No, King Canute. He didn't have much luck in that. Anyway, we were talking about the Dutch euthanasia vans, and Charles saw this article here about island nations look to the law to fend off extinction. Okay, the Marshall Islands, roughly two parallel chains of low-lying coral atolls that stretch across 800 miles just north of the equator, have an intensely close relationship with the blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
okay.
Like they're 10 feet above it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can see that, but the thing is, if the Marshall Islands do get covered with water, there's nothing on it but niggers anyway, so I'm... Who cares?
Well, the good news is that it'll also swamp L.A., New York, and of course, Miami Beach, which would actually be a definite plus as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, right. Okay, I tell you, now let's switch to newnation.org here. And as I've said before, it's newnation.org. This is the ultimate site for news about black crime, Mexican crime, and homo crime and disgusting homo stuff. That's all really this site is. It's one big, huge compendium of black crime stories here. Okay, let's see, like Chinese DuPont worker pleads guilty to stealing secrets for Chinese government. SWAT team shoots Korean gunman in bank, rescues hostages, blah, blah, blah. Two blacks arrested for rape, torture of Liberian migrants while they're doing that to other niggers. Black Memphis sex offender charged with rape of 5-year-old girl. This is the type of stories you can find here. On and on and on. Okay, here we go. Now, this is mildly interesting. Arizona sheriff unveils Obama birth probe. You know, the federal government has been investigating Sheriff Joe Arpaio down there in Maricopa County because he's being mean to the illegal aliens. He's actually enforcing the law, and we can't have that now. So the FBI is investigating Arpaio, and now he's investigating Obama, investigating his birth certificate. Unveil the preliminary results of an investigation conducted by members of his volunteer task force into the authenticity of President Obama's birth certificate, a controversy driven by the so-called birther movement that has been widely debunked, but which remains alive in the eyes of some. No, it hasn't been widely debunked.
It hasn't been debunked at all, actually.
Okay. Well, lots of luck, Sheriff Joe, but I think a decision has just been made in the corridors of power that that issue is not going to be addressed, period, end of story. I suspect Obama probably was born in Kenya and therefore is not eligible to hold the office of president. I suspect everybody in Washington, D.C. knows it, and they have simply decided to ignore the law and ignore the Constitution, which is happening more and more in this administration. I can't get over the fact that Obama now legally has the power to execute American citizens without trial, just on his say-so, and he also has the power to lock them up indefinitely without trial, or writ of habeas corpus, again, just on his say-so, or the say-so of a U.S. attorney, and nothing has been done. There were a few feeble protests on the internet when this National Defense Authorization Act was passed, and now it's gone, it's off the radar, and that thing is sitting on the books. And they're going to do what they do. They're going to let it lie fallow for a few years until everybody's forgotten about it. And then they're going to start killing people and locking people up. And they're going to say, well, this has been the law for some years now. Why didn't you protest about it? Why didn't you do something about it back then? Et cetera, et cetera. All right. We've got a panel discussion today with Axis Sally and with Mac, who was on here a few weeks ago. Well, let's go over today's news and see what's interesting. Okay, we've got a story here. 4-year-old's drawing leads to dad's arrest. One day last week at school, Jesse Sansone's 4-year-old daughter drew a picture of a man with a gun. The teacher didn't like it, so she called Family and Social Services. Now, if you think that's an outrageous overreaction, just wait. According to the Calgary Herald, okay, this must be in Canada. Okay. According to the Calgary Herald, when Jesse went to pick up his daughter and his other children at the end of the day, he was handcuffed, arrested, and strip-searched while they looked for this gun up his ass, I guess.
Okay. With crayons.
Yeah, they got a picture of crayons at the story. I don't know what the... Okay, they did actually find one after they went and searched the family's home in Ontario, only it turned out to be a toy. Yes, the only gun in the entire house was a toy gun. Okay, that sounds like Canada for you.
Yep.
Mac, you're kind of into the gun thing. I believe it is still possible to legally own a handgun in Canada, but you practically have to have an act of parliament to do it.
Not quite an act of parliament, but there are a lot of hoops you have to jump through. But yeah, as long as you can qualify and you can manage to convince your local agencies to grant you the purchase permits and the ownership permits and the permits to get your ammunition and the permits to keep it in your house and the permits to take it with you to go to the range to shoot it, permits to actually load the gun, well, then you can actually have one. It's just there's so many hoops you have to go through to get it.
Wait, am I to understand that Mac owns a gun?
A toy one.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
Right, okay. Right.
Now, I remember when I was in like second or third grade, I used to draw swastikas before I knew what they were. I thought it was a neat design that I had made up.
Yeah, so did we.
And,
when I was
you know, I'd probably still be in jail today under our standards now.
I don't know about jail. I remember, you know, we used to have these like paper covers we put on our school books and we'd put one on in September. And of course, by May, the thing would be so tattered and be falling off. But there were swastikas all over me and a lot of kids. Of course,
most kids.
Yeah, right. I think it was a reincarnational thing, because I think a lot of us were possibly reborn ex-German soldiers, but we won't get into that. But for whatever reason, it's just like I mentioned a few weeks ago when we were running around on the playground with Confederate flags during the Civil War centennial. We had little hats with the Confederate flags on it. Nobody thought anything about it. And it's really weird because, matter of fact, I think I've gone into this before, but this was like a little bit less than 20 years after the war. And here were these kids drawing swastikas on things. And again, I can't remember that anybody ever did say anything about it. The only person that I remember that was bothered by all these swastikas was one kid whose mother was a German war bride, and she was disturbed by it. Maybe, you know, brought back bad memories or good memories or whatever, but nobody cared. Now, if a kid were to draw a swastika on something in preschool, my God, you'd have Child Protective Services, you'd have the police, you'd have NPR doing a story, the parents would be arrested and sent to be deprogrammed, strip searched, you know, looking for guns and crayons and bodily orifices and this sort of stuff. It's just, definitely, it's an indication of how completely paranoid this society is getting and how weak and uncertain of themselves and how fearful society is getting. I find it really significant that almost 70 years after the Führer died, he still has the power to scare these people shitless. I think that's a testament to the power of the National Socialist idea and their fear that white people one day will do something similar, that one day something like the Northwest Front will catch on. I mean, you can tell sometimes in the way these people deal with us, they're scared of us.
And right, they should be.
Good. Okay, here's one for Mac. A pregnant Snooki is the best situation.
Why is this for Mac?
Mac? Well, Mac is a follower of Jersey Shore.
Oh, he's, what? I don't think so. I could not imagine anybody who would actually want to sleep with an Oompa Loompa. I swear, it's like they took an Oompa Loompa and let him dye her hair brown instead of green.
I mean, we all do know, don't we, that so-called Snooki is not actually a New Jersey Italian. She is a Chilean orphan. She's actually a mestizo. She's an Indian. Yep. It was adopted by Italians in New Jersey. I suppose that's a step up of sorts. Anyway, she was adopted by Italians in New Jersey, and so she grew up in that subculture, whatever. But racially, she's not even white. She's an Indian.
And some man actually wanted to hit that?
With orange skin.
You got a lot of desperate white guys out there, I guess.
Maybe he was actually drunker than she was.
Okay.
It's just hard to imagine.
All right, let's look at our next news item here. Gainesville high school students' racist YouTube rant forces girls to leave school. Again, this is interesting that obviously these are kids, okay? They're, what, 15, 16 years old. This society is so afraid of any racial consciousness at all that they react by forcing a couple of teenage girls to leave their school when they actually protest, even verbally. Okay, it says, after two minors from Gainesville High School in Gainesville, Florida, posted a nearly 14-minute long racist rant on YouTube, the girls are, quote-unquote, no longer students at the school. Last week, 8 police officers were brought to the campus in light of death threats the girls were receiving in response to their videos. Okay.
That's because niggers and spicks, they don't like truth getting out. That they're just scumbags.
I gather this was basically niggers. Believe me, I remember what happens to high school kids in a school full of niggers who speak out. That was what made my 3 years at Chapel Hill High School something I'd rather forget. But I can sympathize with these girls, and I understand what happened. But again, the fact is that it could happen in this society. What is wrong with us that we live in a society where kids who speak up on something that concerns them like this, if it happens to touch on race, they are in danger of physical assault, and everyone seems to accept as normal that they are in danger of physical assault and possibly rape and murder at the hands of niggers to the point where they have to bring in 8 cops. And no one seems to find anything at all unusual or off-kilter about this.
So I've noticed that whenever somebody is outed as a racist, the niggers all respond by generally acting like niggers, and then they wonder why people are so racist.
Well, that's because the truth is racist. I spent a good time in public schools in Missouri, and I was token. I was the token white kid at the school. And we had drive-by shootings in the parking lot. We had students who'd pull guns on the teachers. And it just, that was a common everyday occurrence. And if we were to have spoken out about it, then we would be called evil racist because, oh, we're talking bad about black people. They're fucking niggers. Pardon my French.
This racist rant, now, I would assume that this is the most racist thing they can find on this video. We'd We've got a little thing here where we could play the actual video, but it's no good because you guys in the audience can't see it, so we're not going to actually play the video, but...
They actually say the word nigger.
Okay. It says, no, actually, apparently they didn't. It says the videos included comments like, you can understand what we are saying, our accents, we use actual words, black people do not. Yeah. Which is a simple statement of fact.
They did, in the rant, they did say the word nigger a couple of times. They had to be bleeped on the radio.
Oh, okay, right. Them bitches saying nigger.
But yeah, you know, they're
what do you mean you can't understand my accent, motherfucker?
Their statements about what goes on in their school is their experience of what goes on in their school. And that's the way they are.
Oh, yeah. Look, I remember when I was going through my own little private hell at Chapel Hill High School, one of the worst things about it was I think everybody understood full well what was going on and knew that I was telling the truth about the nigger behavior in the school and the things that I was going through, things that I was seeing other kids go through, but no one wanted to talk about it. The parents, the teachers, even, frankly, a lot of the other white kids who were, of course, mostly university liberal kids, probably went on to great careers in academia or the media, etc. Well, I know a couple of them did. But it was like there was this unspoken agreement between all the white people in the school that they were going to put up with these 300 or 400 savages that we had running around in the halls, showing their butts and shitting on the floor and doing crap like that. And we would all just quietly pretend that it doesn't exist. It's like the tea party in the Vicar's Rose Garden where everyone's sipping their tea with their pinkies properly extended. And in the meantime, you got a bunch of spider monkeys running around swinging through the trees and yelling and screaming and throwing things and tearing things up and biting people and shitting in the teacups and all this sort of stuff. And everyone just pretends that it doesn't happen. And that was what struck me is the pervasiveness of this conspiracy of silence. And I'm getting to rave almost as bad as Wallace does sometimes, but you get the idea. And obviously nothing has changed except these days we got YouTube and they got to call in 8 cops to protect these kids and pull them out of school.
I don't know if they were actually expelled, forced to move to another school, or if the girls chose to leave the school because of all the death threats. But it's a statement to the truth of the matter. If it was a bunch of bullshit and that those black people were really good people, they wouldn't be threatening to kill 2 little girls. You get white people that are called Cracker and Honky and Gringo and other slurred names, and there's trash talk about white people, and you don't hear about white people going around threatening to kill someone who's talked bad about them. Niggers do that shit.
Yeah. The girls and one of the parents issued a formal apology in the paper Monday, which I will not read because it's shameful. And that's another thing I've noticed is very important. Anytime somebody makes a politically incorrect slip, they must be publicly humiliated. They must grovel in front of political correctness. It's not enough just to pull the girls out of school. They must renounce and recant. It's almost like the church in the time of Galileo and other heretics. It's not enough just to silence you or imprison you in a dungeon or anything like that. You must publicly recant. I noticed they did the same thing to David Irving when he was arrested in Austria. They actually agreed to let him go as part of a plea bargain instead of sending him to jail for 10 years or whatever it is Holocaust denial carries in Austria. But as part of it, he had to plead guilty and above all, he had to recant. So that, in a way, to the system is almost as important as punishing the white individual. That nobody can be allowed to stand up to the system and not recant. You know, I think it's time we took a little musical trip back to an earlier age of innocence. This is Sheb Woolley.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had one long horn, one big eye. I commenced to shaking and I said, "Ooh-wee, it looks like a purple people eater to me." It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. A one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looked strange to me.
One-eyed?
Well, he came down to earth and he lit in a tree. I said, "Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me." I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
"I wouldn't eat you 'cause you're so tough."
It was the one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. One-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater sure looked strange to me. I said, "Mr. Purple People Eater, what's your line?" He said, "It's eating purple people and it sure is fine. But that's not the reason that I came to land.
I wanna get a job in a rock and roll band."
Well, bless my soul, rock and roll, flying purple people eater, pigeon toad undergrowth, flying purple people eater.
We're short shorts.
Flying purple people eater sure looks strange to me. And then he swung from the tree and he lit on the ground. He started to rock, a really rocking around. Was a crazy ditty with a swinging tune.
Sing a bop, bop, a purple, nap, a loon, bam, boom.
Well, bless my soul, rock and roll, flying purple people eater, pigeon toad. Sure looks strange to me.
Purple people.
And then he went on his way, and then what do you know? I saw him last night on a TV show. He was blowing it out, really knocking them dead, playing rock and roll music through the horn in his head.
I get questions about a lot of things from listeners, questions of varying degrees of humor and seriousness, but there's one that I get every now and then that is sometimes worded in different ways, but it generally goes something like, Harold, how is it possible for you to do what you've done, to have lived all your life in the service of this racial ideal that no one else seems to share, waiting for a revolution that never seems to happen, living year in and year out with barely a single visible sign of progress? You scold others for not being able to do this, but how is it possible? You may be some kind of freak who can live like this, but most normal people aren't, and so you shouldn't be surprised when we tell you to go fuck yourself. Okay, usually the people who ask me this question are too polite to add the last bit, but I know that's what they mean. Look, like just about everything else people throw at me, I get it. That doesn't mean I approve, it simply means I understand. The overwhelming majority of the people who get at all interested in white nationalism of any kind, and the Northwest Imperative in particular, are what used to be called middle Americans, the product of the American middle class, either for real or because they want to be middle class, because that's how they've been shown on TV that they're supposed to be living. You might call them Brady Bunch wannabes. Whether it has anything to do with reality or not, that whole suburban split-level McMansion thing with the two careers and the single kid, or two at most, and the three cars in the garage has become the official normal, the goal for which we're all supposed to be striving. You're supposed to obtain that American dream through a combination of two things: as much formal education as you can obtain by placing yourself in lifelong debt to financial parasites for student loans, and through conformity. You must be what Orwell, in his novel 1984, called good-thinkful. Not necessarily one kind of conformity. You do have a couple of templates to choose from, everything from hippy-dippy 60s retread to neoconservative and 700 Club, but it has to be one of the approved templates. After you sign in your own blood for $50,000 or $75,000 in student debt with interest, and you get whatever useless degree you go for and start your career of office and cubicle hopping, you're supposed to work hard, meaning that you keep your lips applied to the correct buttocks in the workplace, and you keep your nose clean, never uttering certain words or certain thoughts in public. Now, you really should vote Democrat and let it be known, but in red states, Republicans okay, so long as you stay away from the Tea Party and Ron Paul and Rush Limbaugh. The theory is that if a white boy does all this and survives the layoffs and the Obama Depression, and if he doesn't get sick with a catastrophic illness that destroys his family's life savings and sends his kids back to the trailer park, and if he can escape being butchered like an animal in a black or brown on white hate crime, which of course no one will ever call a hate crime, then after the system has squeezed him dry of every penny he couldn't find some way to pass on to his kid or kids before he kicks the bucket, then our white boy will eventually die in a state of medicated, pain-free stupor in some state-run nursing home at about age 80 or so, ostensibly happy. Does that sound about right? So how could Harold possibly give up this wonderful American dream? And how can I possibly ask others to do it? I mean, that is what I'm asking you, right? You didn't mishear me? Yep, that's what I'm asking you to do, all right. As to why I'm asking you to do it, I'm asking that of you because it has to be done. And because our entire race is going to become extinct within a century, if somehow I can't persuade you to be a man instead of a turd, that's why. As to how I myself do it, I've tried to explain this before, but as no one ever actually seems to listen to anything I say or remember it if they do, I'll give it another shot. Francis Parker Yaki wrote in Imperium, "This destiny does not tire, nor can it be broken, and its mantle of strength descends upon those in its service." And it's true. Pastor Robert Miles told me once, "Harold, the Bible says that no man may serve two masters. Way too many white people try to keep a foot in both camps, so to speak. They want to dabble in white nationalism as a kind of hobby, while still somehow maintaining the American middle-class lifestyle and the respect and admiration of the local Rotary Club and the PTA. Now, that can't be done. The movement is a jealous god, and she will allow you to have no other gods before her. And if you try two-time in the movement, you're going to come very short." Now, Bob was absolutely right. After 4 decades of this roller coaster, I have to say that virtually every time I ever saw somebody get in serious trouble over the movement, it was because he tried to have his cake and eat it too. He tried to live in both worlds. He refused to be like the apostles, whom Jesus commanded to give away all their material wealth and follow him instead. Even Edgar Steele, who was so viciously framed, might not have been targeted if he hadn't been so intent on maintaining his house and land and wealthy lifestyle that he loaded himself up with all that gold and silver, which provided the financial motive for Larry Fairfax, the informer. Now, I'll tell you what Bob told me all those years ago, and it seems to be true, based on my many years of first-hand observation. If you will lay aside all ego, all self, and live your life for the 14 words and the 14 words only, you will be sustained. I don't say sustained well. I don't say you will be happy. You probably won't be. Although I can tell you that there is a great inner peace and contentment in knowing that you are doing the one thing that you came here to do, no matter how rough and unpleasant that might be on a daily basis. But I repeat, surrender your ego, surrender your selfish desire to live only for yourself, surrender all hope of material reward in this world, and do your duty to the 14 words all your days, and you will be sustained. And most likely you'll stay out of prison, too, and don't ask me how that works. I haven't figured that one out. Maybe when you're so broke you can't afford to buy 12 packs of beer, you don't get drunk and do stupid things. I don't know. Okay, look, this is going to sound like I'm getting religious here. I'm not. Let's just say I'm getting metaphysical. I believe that we live many lives in succession and that this is part of a natural process which we don't understand. And it does involve karma and some outside direction to human affairs. God, whatever you want to call it. If you disagree on that, fine, more power to you. I'm not missionary about it, and I don't insist on it. But I think I've said this before. I take the view that in one way or another, all of you are going to have to take, if you want to be part of history and the cosmic will, and not just a piece of drool dripping from some Jew's liver lips. I don't doubt that in the past you have lived in times and places and situations where you were free to devote yourself to yourself, to your own pleasure, to your own growth and fulfillment, to such things as a loving family and a career that was all yours and your own esteem and ego. You've lived such lives in the past and no doubt will live such lives again in the future. But this is not that kind of life. This is a business trip. This life you're living right now isn't a holiday or a weekend. This is a work day, a long one. You and I have a job to do. It's the same job, and I need you to quit fucking around, quit trying to slither out of it, and get your ass up here and help me. We all have miles to go before we sleep, as Robert Frost said. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98104. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sirsha Andaban. Freedom.